tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to BYT Radio. My name is Brandon Weatherby. BYT Radio stands for Brightest Young Things Radio. Brightest Young Things is an arts and culture website based out of Washington, D.C., with a presence in New York and Chicago. We also throw events. We just announced one for Nat Geo Live, which is a place. Jamal, you're not Jack. Jamal, how are you today?
I'm quite well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You don't have to call me sir. That's a very weird thing Jack has never said, sir. I've just made fun of Jack's hats.
He has great hats.
He has great hats, but he's hiding something.
what's underneath those hats?
That's sir. Exactly right. You, on the other hand, are not wearing a cap because you have nothing to hide.
Nothing. I have a full head of hair, and I got some grays sprinkled in there. So I'm feeling quite distinguished right now.
You are a distinguished gentleman, and with us today are two other distinguished gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a transition. We have two of the there you go. Clap for me, not the guests. Only for me. It's my show, Brandon Weatherby Show. Yeah, two of the chefs from the most popular restaurant in Washington, D.C., Maidan. How should I actually pronounce it? We have Chris and Gerald here. Chris, say your name.
Chris Morgan.
Gerald, say your name.
Gerald Addison.
Thank you. You're not under interrogation. I'm trying to see how similar your vocal tones are.
Chris tends to be much louder than mine.
That's an understatement. Yeah.
Okay, so Chris's tone is a little bit lower timbre than Gerald. Is that correct, Gerald?
I'd say that's fair.
Okay, if you had to have a celebrity voice, whose celebrity voice would you have?
I've never thought about
that. You've never thought of who you sounded like?
No,
that's
not even very loud.
Well, there's lots of loud people. Gilbert Gottfried's very loud, but he has a high register. You sound nothing like Gilbert Gottfried. Andrew Dice Clay sometimes loud. You're kind of similar to his because he's got a raspier voice.
I love Dice Clay.
Do you like dice?
I like playing dice, like shooting dice.
Sure.
Is that the proper...
That could be it. What I'm going to do, Gerald, is I'm going to do something. I'm going to shove this microphone closer to your face.
Okay.
And I said that into a microphone so that you would understand what I was doing, and it's not just a man attacking you.
I did feel attacked.
And I'd like to apologize for that, but it was for the good of the listener at home.
He handled that well, though.
He did handle it well, Gerald.
Yeah, very calm.
Thank you.
For being attacked, he didn't react very well.
Jamal, who do people think you sound like?
I'll take Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee Williams, you want to be sounding
like prepared for that.
You don't sound like Billy Dee Williams.
No, no.
Unfortunately, I get Seth Rogen a lot, which is not a good thing.
Why is that a bad thing?
Is it a bad thing?
Because he's a little heavier than me and I don't get high. So, like, why would I want to be a successful Canadian instead of a middling American?
What about Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan, I do not get a lot of you sound like Joe Rogan. And I'd like to thank you for. They're clearly brother and brother. Joe Rogan, lots of people know that Seth Rogen and Joe Rogan are brothers. One of them believes the earth is round, and the other one just loves MMA. You guys figure out who is who. Anyways, you guys have a real smelly job. So for the people that don't know, your restaurant is the one everyone loves, but it's full of fire, literal fire. This is a weird question, but it's kind of important for people that don't know. What is the premise of Maidan?
So at Maidan, we cook food from... We like to say Morocco to Iran, kind of everything in between. So North Africa, the Caucasus, the whole Arab world, Turkey. It's a little bit of a vague group of countries.
Sure.
But
there's something unique and distinct about your specific restaurant in the Washington, D.C. scene.
Yeah. I mean, we cook everything over live fire.
There we go.
We have no gas in the restaurant.
Yes.
I think there's some other restaurants that have hearths that... You know, probably also have gas.
Say that word again.
Hearths.
So, when you go to Maidan, am I saying it correctly? I know I'm going to mispronounce it about a dozen times, and I'd like to apologize.
We tell people there's no wrong way to say it.
It's pronounced and spelled differently across multiple countries, so it's really Maidan.
Okay, so I feel less
bad now.
We get
corrected constantly, but we just roll with it.
I love the place. Everyone loves the place. You walk into the place, you think it's going to reek of smoke. Because all you see is fire. You feel the fire. It does not reek of smoke because you have this giant... Is that a furnace? What is it called?
A hearth.
No, not the hearth.
Hood.
The hood. The hood is like bigger than the hearth. I think I'm referencing Blues Traveler right now. But the thing is massive, but I just want to know from a smelling perspective, and I ask all the people that deal with barbecue this, how do your clothes smell when you get home?
You talk to my wife about that, but quite smoky.
It's quite smoky. So what do you do? Will you wear your clothes inside, or do you have a mudroom simply to change to make your marriage work?
I just accept that I always smell like smoke.
You always smell.
It's not a bad scent.
I don't think it's a bad scent. I didn't say it's a bad scent. But
I'm sure there's some hipster cologne out there that smells the exact same.
Absolutely. Also, Pot Kettle Black here, hipster cologne, and you and me. Come on, we should not be making fun of the people we look in the mirror and see. So,
I'm for it.
Okay. What do you use for detergent? That's a serious question.
Tide.
So Tide is good. Do you use the Febreze type?
No, I think I just use the regular one. I have very sensitive skin.
You have sensitive skin?
My wife's a bargainer, so whatever's on discount at Costco.
Okay. So do you recommend a Costco membership for a marriage to last?
Oh, absolutely.
What have you recently...
If only for the samples, I mean...
Okay, so I was at a Costco yesterday because we're like on the fence, the wife and I are like, should we get a Costco membership? There's no reason for us to get a Costco membership. I just want to look. And they won't let us in. I don't like that.
Oh, yeah.
Let me peruse. Yeah. The internet exists. Why do I need you, Costco? Okay, so no controversial statements on Costco on your behalf. I get it. Maidan's playing safe with the Costco statements. Okay.
Trying to stay in the rewards program, you know?
I could say mean things about the Waltons, but I will not. So, you guys are doing quite well because everyone seems to love you. Not really a question, more of a statement. You went from a successful restaurant that everyone was excited about, coming from Rose's Luxury, to actually opening, and then you made it onto most every top 10 list. If I think it's Washingtonian put you at number one?
Bon Appetit put us at number two.
But that's for the country, though, right?
For the country. Yeah. Washingtonian, no, we're not in... We were 14th last year.
They put a picture of your spot in the place, a photo, a picture.
Jesus Washingtonian?
God. Yes. In the most recent roundup.
23rd.
Yeah.
Okay. Could we just agree that you're doing well?
Yeah.
I hope
so. We're very happily doing well.
When Bon Appetit rank puts you at number two in the country, how does that change how you function, or does it change how you function?
I think we've reached a point before that where we thought there was no way we could be any busier, which is obviously a very good problem to have.
Wonderful problem.
And then we got busier.
Yeah.
I think with everything that comes out, you know, the amount of attention that's paid to different periodicals and, you know, news sources, people from different walks kind of.
Sure. So once that happens, do you find your clientele being less from D.C. proper and more?
A lot of travelers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're now a destination place. When you're a destination place, does that change how you approach food, or you're like, this will come and go?
No,
it doesn't matter.
I think it changes. For me, it's like the extra bump in terms of like my given energy on a random day when someone shows up and they're like, I just drove here from North Carolina. And I'm like, cool, what are you doing in town? They're like, we wanted to come to your restaurant.
Yeah. That makes
that's
you
the coolest thing in the world.
That's awesome. I didn't know if you would even notice that. So you do keep, you guys do know who's coming in and why they're they'll let you know sometimes.
We just try to like interact with people.
Okay.
The kitchen's totally open. So
yes.
All the tables downstairs, like Chris or I, depending on who's there, like we try to speak to all the tables, bring things to them, kind of ask them how their meal is, maybe give them a little extra thing.
We're going to transition for the people that can't actually get into your restaurant on a weekend night and give some tips about how to get in, and also like tips at home if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Game of Thrones is coming back on Sunday nights in Washington, D.C. That will be the best time to get a seat at your restaurant and Bad Saint and other places where people have to wait. I don't know if Game of Thrones have actually been on TV since you've opened, but apparently every Sunday night during the Game of Thrones run will be the best time to eat well in Washington, D.C. in terms of going out. That's my number one. That's my tip to eat at your restaurant.
Yeah.
Number two, I've had friends that had way more success walking in and just doing the bar on like a Wednesday night.
Yeah, the bar is first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell people who ask all the time, like, if you come in at 5 o'clock, you're always going to get a table.
Mm-hmm.
You might not get one right at 5 o'clock. Especially on the weekends, but you know, we keep room for walk-ins. We really want it to be accessible for the neighborhood, and we've always wanted that. You know, in the beginning, we weren't even sure if we were going to take reservations because we wanted it to be kind of more of a neighborhood spot. The reservation thing just kind of makes sense for us.
Yeah.
But it's not as daunting as I think some people kind of allude to.
I'd like to apologize for alluding to being difficult to eat at your restaurant. Number one. Number two. We've mentioned the hearth before, and the bread that comes out of the hearth is amazing, and the bread comes with everything. Has anybody ordered just the condiments that are $1 a pop and just eat the bread?
Yes.
Okay, because to me that seems like a very reasonable thing to do, but that's probably bad for your bottom line.
Well, we intentionally kind of structured the menu to allow for, like, you know, someone to come in and order a plate of hummus and some condiments and bread and sit at the bar and have, like, a really modest experience. But also, you know, we want that. We encourage that. I mean, that's part of, like, the neighborhood thing that we're hoping to foster is, like, to allow for people to walk in and have a quick bite and not feel like they broke the bank, but also have enough things on the menu that if they really want, they can do what we hope people will do, which is large groups of people, way too much food.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, you know.
It's a great spot. It feels of the moment. Let's get out of the restaurant for a second. Do you bend grill at home? Or are you sick of fire? You're like, microwave all the way.
No, I think at a certain point, like, you start using wood fire, it's hard to kind of go away from that.
Okay, so that's what I want to talk about.
I grill all the time in my house when I cook.
Are you grilling with wood at home?
Yes.
What kind of wood?
I have the same exact guy that delivers wood for the restaurant delivered to my house.
Okay, what should I get as not the a chef that people love and just a dude that doesn't work in a restaurant? What type of wood should I be purchasing for my grill at home?
I think, like, what we use mostly oak, but you could use oak, hickory, apple, cherry.
And could I, like, pick that up at Ace, or do I have to go to, like, a tree farm? Where should I get my wood?
I think the issue for, like, grilling at home with wood is, like, generally the size is a little bit big.
Okay.
Like, I'm doing an event on Saturday, and we're going to use, like, kind of random grills that they're bringing for us. Like, I'm going to buy specific, like, smaller pieces. For the restaurant, we use pretty big pieces because it's a little bit different.
It's quite intimidating. It probably makes for a really great Instagram photo from the top, watching the gentlemen and the women use the wood. It's very intimidating. It's beautiful. It made me want to go home and buy cauliflower and see what I could do with it with a piece of wood. That seems very difficult. Do you got any tips for grilling cauliflower?
Par-bake it.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
We cook it in, like, an oven at, like, 350 degrees for 15 minutes.
Okay.
So it's cooked through, so we're really just trying to, like, get nice color on it. Cooking it from raw would take a long time.
How long is a long time? I got time. I could smoke things.
2 hours.
That's a long time for cauliflower.
The problem is also, like, with certain things, especially that, like, by the time that were to be where you'd want it to be texturally, the flavor of all the smoke, even though it's indirect, would be kind of acrid and unpleasant at least in terms of what we're going for.
Sure.
There's ways to do it where you could do it from raw and eventually get what you want and the texture and all the things. But a lot of what we do is less about, like, wanting smoke contact and more about just getting the nice, like, char grilled flavor, which our wood complements, because we use the type of wood that we use really lends to that.
So. How long did it take to find your wood guy?
Surprisingly long.
No, this is not an uncommon thing. The wonderful barbecue down the street, Federal's Pig, same thing. They're very loyal to one specific dude, and it took them a long time to find that dude.
We've gone through several people. We found someone that we like now. I actually have somebody right now who's trying to, you know, sell us wood as well, and, you know, they seem great, but I kind of feel like we are kind of loyal to the guys that we work with now.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is that they just bring us wood and we have, like, a set price every week.
Yeah.
We don't really have to think about it so much. And with a lot of other people, like, you're trying to kind of figure out when you're going to be out and stay, like, 3 days ahead. And this is, like, the guy just shows up, he brings wood, and we never have to think about it.
And the type of wood can vary. Yes. Which has been an issue with other...
So the type of wood will change how the food tastes.
Well, yeah, there's certain woods, like, you don't want to cook with at all. I mean, pine, obviously, is quite dangerous to cook with. Walnut is another one you want to avoid. Black walnut, specifically. I mean, there's just certain types of wood. Like he was saying, like, the fruit woods and different hardwoods, like hickory, those are good to cook with, but it's not doing what we want it to, which is kind of just be... Obviously, the hearth is the star of the show, but we want the food to be the star of the show in terms of flavor. And when you use a different type of wood, it can kind of take over.
So did you build the menu based on the hearth, or you got a hearth based on the menu you wanted to create?
I think we built the menu. Like, Chris and I had both worked in restaurants that did wood fire. We both had a lot of ideas about how those restaurants functioned and what we wanted for our own restaurant. You know, we always knew that it was going to be wood fired. It was more about playing to the strengths of the fire. You know, our food is very simple. It's very, like, bare bones as far as, like, grilled proteins, grilled vegetables, you know, we didn't really want it to be very elaborate or composed. We wanted to just kind of focus on the cooking techniques and be able to put it out quickly. So I think when we started to design the hearth, we both had some insight and we're trying to kind of figure out the best way to kind of offer.
So you did design the hearth?
Yeah.
That had to be a fun, long, easy, simple build out.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Was it really?
Yeah,
that was one of the most fun parts.
You know, so you got everything you wanted then. If you were the guys building it out, like you knew where everything was going to
be. Yeah, the only restrictions we had were, we knew size. The space we had to work with. So mm-hmm. we knew edge to edge how much space we had. And then kind of just figuring out, you know, filling in the gaps in terms of the equipment we wanted, what we were trying to produce, the ovens being a huge part of that. And then we have a guy in... like 45 minutes outside the city in Virginia, who former special forces who actually builds targets for shooting ranges, but
okay.
happens to be quite proficient at this advanced level of CAD that I'm not sure quite what it's called.
But sure.
He designs all the metal pieces and then prints them and then uses a high pressured water jet to cut the metal, which is super cool to see.
So that sounds like incredibly cutting edge, futuristic to do, in theory, the simplest cooking possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's easier to source your fruit, your vegetables, your proteins than the wood. I feel like it's probably easier to find the right person for lamb than it is for...
Yeah, others. I mean, we're always kind of like looking and talking to people. You know, luckily, like a lot of people in the area already work with a lot of kind mm-hmm. of like local growers that we like. So a lot of that kind of is done before us. We have people that we've worked with before at other restaurants that we already had relationships with, but it's kind of a constant evolving process.
Yeah. Part of the, one of the things that I think we, you know, we talk about a lot, we work with Moon Valley Farm in One Straw, but those are two of our, the farms that we support, but mainly Moon Valley. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think that, you know, we constantly want to support all the farmers. I mean, when you go to the farmer's market, you meet sure. all these great people. I have relationships with 10 plus farmers.
Yeah. But
the reality is when you only have one or two restaurants, supporting one farm
yeah.
is better than trying to support eight, because you're really not making a difference
sure.
for the individual farmer. If you're buying, I'll buy your carrots, I'll buy your hot peppers, yeah. I'll buy your lettuce.
It's I see.
If you can just support one farm, you'll actually really make a difference. And if everybody consciously does that, it, as a whole, it makes a big difference.
You mentioned the carrots. Everyone loves the carrots at your place. Where are the carrots from?
Moon Valley.
Okay, perfect. Perfect transition then. How are you? Could we talk about preparing the carrots?
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, are you putting those in the oven at 350 for a minute and then putting them onto the fire? How is this work? Because a carrot, for those of those that don't know, are smaller than a head of cauliflower. Carrots are smaller.
We do par cook the carrots.
We do par cook the carrots.
Yeah, it would take a long time yeah. for carrots to, because they're super dense.
Yeah.
That was, I think, from the beginning, I think we acknowledged that we would have to do that.
Okay.
I mean, you could cook carrots from raw, but...
What is the... Could we walk through the carrot process here?
Please. Yeah.
All right, great. You personally go to Moon Valley Farms, you pick out the carrots from the ground, you bring them to Maidan, right off of 14th Street in Washington, D.C. Not really off of U Street, not really Columbia Heights. You're in this weird other area that's not a neighborhood, that is definitely
a
neighborhood.
Cardoza.
You're Cardoza, yeah, sure, okay. But you're not Columbia Heights, you're not U Street, you're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You're right by the high school.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
We've established where the high school works at, we've established that you've personally pulled all the carrots from the ground. If we get to Maidan, then what do we do with the carrots?
Wash them.
Yeah. You wash them. Great wash step. Them. Do you peel them in any way?
You don't peel them.
You don't peel them in any way.
I mean, I think with all vegetables, it's really about just tasting the vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
I always joke when one of our cooks will come up to us and say, "Hey, do you think this needs to be peeled?" And I'm like, "Taste it.
Yeah.
Try the skin. If it's bitter, if there's a reason to peel it, then peel it." I mean, with everything, it's always. I mean, with every type of even meat. Fish, whatever, it's about trying it.
Sure.
And is it better with or without? And that's sure. how I think we make a lot of our decisions at the restaurant. So peel on.
Peel on carrots, then what do we do?
Then we kind of rub them with olive oil and okay. salt. We cook them in the oven for 8-9 minutes.
At 350-ish?
Yeah, somewhere around okay. there.
The sauce that you have on there is amazing, but I'm assuming that comes after the fire.
After yes. we cook them.
Okay, yeah. Then you put them onto the fire?
Yes.
On yeah. a grate on the fire or like into the fire?
Just right on the grill.
Right on the grill. How long?
5 minutes.
Five minutes each side, or 5 minutes total, consistently moving them?
Just until they get hot.
Then what's that sauce? Because that sauce is very good.
And I want harissa.
Okay.
It's a North African chili condiment of roasted red pepper. This one's a little more mild than what you'd traditionally find in that part of the world, as most of them are like pure hot chilies. But this one is cut with red pepper. So it's roasted red pepper, serrano chilies, cumin, and olive oil, lemon.
Now, this seems very easy to do at home.
Yeah,
it is. It's a very easy recipe.
I don't know if I've ever been to any barbecue where they were like pre-cooking the vegetables before they put them on the grill.
Yeah, I think people don't really think about that as far as home cooking, but it just some vegetables just do better with a little bit of
besides pre-cooking. Carrots and cauliflower, what else? I'm clearly trying to just learn from you too.
Any sort of like
potato. Sweet potato. So the sweet potatoes look amazing on your grill. You have them packed in this like metal container thing, and then are those pre-cooked and then you put them on the grill, and that's why they're like that?
We pre-cook those. Once again, a lot of the things that are really starchy, those also require just a lot of time.
Okay.
And so we pre-cooked them, and then we put them in the third pans, which is like the third of the size of a hotel pan.
Yes.
By the fire to kind of warm them through so that when we're picking them up, it doesn't take 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Because obviously an individual sweet potato, even if it's par cooked, well, just to warm through can take quite a while.
Why do this? Clearly it's a success, but like what was the impetus for like we're going to do this type of restaurant in this area, we're going to have this giant hearth, we're going to have a bigger hood. Why do this at all?
I think like what I said before, like we both cooked with wood before. Mm-hmm. It's just so fun. Like that, like I've said it before, like building a fire every day is awesome. All the cooks love it. It's just so instinctual, like, and raw, and I think once you get used to it, like it's hard to go back.
Did either of you go to culinary school?
We both did.
Yeah.
Did you use fire in this way in culinary school?
No.
I didn't think so. Why? Like, this is literally the oldest way to cook, but it's not taught. Is it the least scientific way to cook?
I think it's very technical when you start to think about
it. Sure, it's technical, but is it like in terms of, well, how technical, maybe technical isn't the word, but like how precise could you get with the temperature when you're using?
Very.
Really?
There's a ton of nuance. Like some things we find take better with like more direct flame. Some things we want very gentle embers.
Yeah, I mean, we'll throw cast iron pans, which is the majority of the cookware we use is cast iron right on the fire. We'll throw cast iron pans right in the coals. Someone came in last night and made them tadig mahi, which is like a crispy Iranian rice dish with fish cooked into the rice so that the skin and rice crisp at the same time. And I literally put the pan on top of the coals underneath the grill. So it's it's not like numerically precise. Like you're not like staring at a 650 degree mark, you know, with like an infrared thermometer.
Yeah.
But you know, like he's saying, it's very instinctual. Like when you need the pan to be hot, you can put it in a hot spot. When you want something to get more direct flame contact, there's a place for that.
The same way that when you're cooking on a burner, like you don't know the exact temperature that the pan is at. You just kind of have to observe and you know, feel things, and it starts to become much more natural as you do it more and more.
Let's go outside the restaurant, but keep talking about food. If you're gonna have a barbecue at home, what are you gonna serve people?
I think it depends on what time of year it is.
July 4th? Yeah. That weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if there's like corn in season, definitely corn. Okay. I'm a big fan of like cold sides and grilled meat.
Okay.
Like I might have like one grilled vegetable, but I like all the salads and things like that. And then
let's move it further later in the year. Let's say it's Labor Day. It's kind of chilly out. What would you grill then?
Labor Day is like the beginning of September?
The beginning of September.
Oh, that's the best time of year.
Okay.
Yeah, by far.
Literally, like, the best produce is, like, early September to mid-September.
Okay.
You get all the summer stuff. You start to get some fall stuff.
Okay.
You have, like, summer squash, winter squash, peppers, tomatoes, corn. Literally, it's the best time of year.
All right, now make me a plate. What's on the plate?
Everything.
I love grilled squash that time of year.
Okay.
How
would you grill the squash?
From raw.
Okay, from raw. Okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
Summer squash, though.
Summer squash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zucchini, yellow squash, stuff like that.
Is there anything you won't put on a grill? Like ice cream, you can't. I mean, it's probably...
One of the cooks literally said we should try to grill ice cream the other day. I think you need a deep freezer and some sort of a cooked dough on the outside.
Sure.
I'm not ruling it out.
So the answer is anything. You will put anything on a grill.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Party. What's the biggest mistake people make when they're grilling? Be it in your restaurant or in the greater
I think it's
world.
Too much heat.
Yeah.
I think
too
like
much
some
heat.
Things like generally you know, cooking really a steak nice. With like a giant flame. Mm-hmm. Like I think sometimes you need to be a little bit more restrained.
You gentlemen are building fires literally every day. You got any fire starting tips?
We usually start with small pieces of wood.
Okay.
And kind of like build up. Like we have fire boxes.
Okay.
So you know, we use the kind of smaller kindling.
Sure.
And then kind of build up to like kind of medium pieces of wood to like larger pieces of wood.
And when you say build up, you literally mean build up in terms of height.
Yeah, so the box okay. is an octagon.
Okay.
So we're kind of like layering wood and then putting like we use old menus that are, you know, we can't use at the restaurant. And, you know, sometimes we'll use cardboard boxes that we break down.
And you gentlemen, are you building multiple fires because you need them to be a different...
four fires yeah. in the beginning.
Okay. And then do you feed them... I'm assuming you feed them at different times.
We have individual fire boxes that service different parts of the hearth.
Yes.
As well as the two wood-burning ovens. So for me, when building fires, like Gerald said, small pieces of wood are very important. It's just really thinking about the flow of oxygen.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of people mess up, I think. Like my wife and I have a fireplace at home. And when I was like... She was like, how do you build the fire? And I showed her and I said, it's really just thinking about, just imagine if you can visualize air trying to flow through all the different pieces of wood.
And that's what you want.
Yeah. And just kind of, you don't want too much space because then the flame will die out. But you want to have it like just enough that there's enough cracks and crevices for the air to flow through the wood as well as not like smolder itself out. So
I was not a Boy Scout, so this is very helpful for me, and I thank you. I have a fire pit. Do you think I could use my fire pit to cook?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
What could I start with? This is a serious question.
I think you could buy like a grill grate,
yes.
essentially, or you know, you can buy like a cast iron kind of plancha sort of thing.
We have a pretty large cast iron. We have a few, and I feel like I could just figure this out.
I would just get some bricks.
Okay.
Get a grill grate, use some cast irons, and just start throwing shit out there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, bricks or cinder blocks.
Bricks and cinder... These are...
And you can actually create like a... I mean, in theory, you could create something that's permanent just by getting a, you know, a little bit of casting or whatever, cement, and literally just building... I mean, just like the side of a brick house.
Yeah.
Building your bricks up on either side, and you can stick a grate... on top of that, and then just use a couple more bricks to weight down either side and cook right over
and
top of it.
Bonus you can points adjust for your fire grill. Bricks.
Fire bricks?
Yeah, fire bricks.
That's a thing.
Yeah, it's a high heat aggregate that allows you to cook at extreme temperatures without the brick like decomposing.
And it's like readily available at like Lowe's and stuff like that?
You can buy it at Home Depot.
Home Depot, great. That's a plug for Home Depot, everybody. Check it out.
Yeah.
Home Depot.
Yeah. Discount to follow.
It's right across. It's not across the street from the Costco I was at. That's a Lowe's. I like Lowe's customer service more.
I'm sure Lowe's will have fire bricks too.
I'm not promising anything to the listener. That's a Lowe's devotee. I like Ace, but it's just like, come on, guys, what's going on, Ace? Anyways, you're both very nice men. You make the grill things happen, and it's very delicious. Your restaurant, not surprisingly, very easy for vegans.
Yes.
I wouldn't do that. You're wasting delicious meats if you go and you're a vegan, but you could have a great meal if you're a vegan.
Yeah, from the beginning, we really wanted it to be accessible for vegans and vegetarians.
That's nice of you.
The one thing is that we put honey in our bread, in the dough. So some vegans don't eat honey. But
I believe the term is vegan plus.
Is it really?
Yeah, for consuming, if you don't consume honey.
Okay.
I think
okay.
the majority of vegans I talk to do eat honey. But
okay.
That's kind of the one thing.
Do you have a preferred honey?
I think it just depends. Like, there's cool honeys from, like, different flowers. And
so will you use the same honey for the bread, or will it just rotate based on, like...
We use the same honey.
Okay.
I think it's, like, it's one of those things. It's, like, if it makes sense to use a different kind of honey
sure.
for something in particular, we will. But for the most part, we just use the same honey across the board.
Do you gentlemen cook at home?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're... How often are you in the restaurants?
6 days a week.
That's a lot of days a week. So you're not making like 3-course meals at home.
The one sometimes.
Yeah. Where do you shop for food?
I go I go to Best World a lot, which is in Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
Because so I love the people there, and it's fun, and they have a lot of things. But, you know, outside of that, I try to, depending on the time of year, I try to get majority of my stuff from the farmers markets.
Do you live in Mount Pleasant?
I do.
That's a nice area to live in.
I love it. Yeah, he lives in there in Mount Pleasant as well.
You both live in Mount Pleasant.
Yep.
That's it. How often are you at Sun Cinema?
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
Eddie Kim does the Lazy Omakase there. So
yeah, with Adam.
We'll go to that occasionally.
Will you go to the Raven?
I was there last night.
How was the Raven last night on a Wednesday night in Washington?
Lots of Yahtzee.
Okay, I get
and
why
and
they're...
water.
Okay, you gentlemen work in restaurants. What... cash only thoughts?
I kind of appreciate it for what it is. Like the Raven's like one of the last bars like that.
Okay, so I worked in a bar for a long time, and we were one of the last bars like that. And then at a certain point, it's like, yeah, we're one of the last bars like this because we're losing money. Because if I'm drunk and I don't have cash on me, at a certain point, like I'm done. But if I have a credit card on me, the night will never end.
This is true.
So
I appreciate it for just that being that bar being that bar. I think
if Bank of America wasn't next door, I wouldn't go have as much as I do.
That's reasonable.
That's all.
Yeah.
Their jukebox is pretty good, too.
It's a great bar.
What would be on your dream jukebox? What one album? You too. It has to be a real album, too. It can't be a compilation. It has to be something you could buy in the stores. So if it's a soundtrack, that's fine. But it can't be like a personal mixtape.
I'd say the Bob Dylan Portrait album.
Why?
I just love it. It's like his early stuff before he got ragged on for switching to electric. And Bob Dylan's my favorite artist. So.
And you would want to hear that in a bar like the Raven.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
And it's also a list of songs that I think 90% of people that know Bob Dylan do not know any single song on the album.
That's another good reason to pick. What would be your one track that you would play from that album?
Oh, that's tough.
Think about that. Well, Gerald answers.
The Clash self-titled.
Why?
I think it's like, I like kind of maybe slightly more aggressive music, but it's just approachable enough.
Okay.
I think some of the music I listen to wouldn't really fit well.
What is your favorite album that should never be in a jukebox? That would not fit?
I don't know about my favorite album.
That'll never fit in a jukebox?
That would never fit in a jukebox, but you're like, you know why it wouldn't fit on a jukebox, but like part of you wants to put it on it as a big FU, but it's like pointless because like no one's going to play it, and people are just going to hate you if you play it.
Well, I was listening to this band from Alabama called Horseback the other day.
Okay.
And it's just like, people are like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Number one, what is the hell wrong with you? What is Horseback like?
It's like a ambient atmospheric black metal.
There you go. So that's why. So like Sun-O, not the best jukebox band.
Yeah, Sun would probably be tough for people.
Yeah.
And it's not even that like aggressive.
No, they're just very, very long songs too.
Yeah. Like I'd love to listen to like Sleep. Dope Smoker, but it's 1 hour long song.
Yeah.
And people have a tough time with that.
Most jukeboxes, CD jukeboxes, will cut it at like minute 10.
Yeah.
They won't let you do the whole album.
You can't have a 64 minute song.
I mean, you can. They just won't let you because they're bigots.
Dicks.
That's right. What Dylan song would you play from that?
I don't know, man. It's one of those front to back albums. I can't pick one. I really love, like, the reason I have a record player at home.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I love my record player is it forces me to listen to entire albums. Not that I wouldn't choose to do that, but often with like the advent of like how we listen to music now, it's like,
sure.
I think most people don't appreciate full albums anymore. Because when you have the Shuffle or, you know, Apple Music, whatever, all these
So you're
things,
railing against the Shuffle function.
I just love full albums. Like there's so many times where I'm sitting at my house and I'm like having coffee in the morning and I put on an album and the sixth song will come on that I haven't heard in like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how have I not listened to this?
What's the last best record you heard that you had and you owned and you forgot about and you just rediscovered?
Norah Jones.
Really? Which one? Come Away With Me?
Yeah, Come Away With Me. It's one of my favorite albums in the world.
You little weak man.
I know. She's talking about metal and I'm talking about Norah
Jones.
She's
very talented. Did you listen to her?
One of my favorite artists.
Did you listen to her duets album with Billy Joe?
I did.
What'd you think?
That was good.
She's more talented than him.
Yeah.
But he's got more money.
Yeah.
Because he wrote a successful musical. He's a very short man. How tall are you?
6 feet.
Yeah, he's like 5'3".
Oh, wow.
Would you respect a 5'3 man?
I have a couple of them that I respect.
but the rest, get out of here. Why don't you grow some feet, you short men?
Yeah.
Same page.
Yeah.
It's a bigoted page.
Just don't sing next to Norah Jones.
What's your favorite album that you recently rediscovered?
That I recently rediscovered.
Yeah. What's your Come Away With Me?
I don't know. I recently I've been putting on like a lot of music at work, and I'm constantly thinking about.
Do your coworkers like you more or less because of this?
I think it depends on the day.
Great. What did you put on yesterday?
I was at Compass Rose yesterday, so we don't have like music that I can listen to from the kitchen, so nothing.
Just silence. People love
that. I was listening to Operation Ivy's album the other day.
Oh, I hate you. Get out of here.
In its entirety.
Op Ivy sucks. Here's why. Tim Armstrong married Brody when she was like 16 or 17.
I can't
the remember. End. I'm
it's a
done.
Great record.
Rancid sucks.
I don't like Rancid very much.
But that fuck Op Ivy, fuck Rancid. Lars has a prison tattoo and didn't like earn it. Fuck off. Just stop. No offense to the man with the tattoos. Just like what are you doing? Who is this for? And it's for young girls to date older men, and it's socially acceptable. That's what
they
it's
for. They were like 18.
I don't care. You should know better. Not you specifically. That's the general you. No excuses at a certain point. Does that make sense?
I think that's...
It'd be different if he was like 18 as well. Then it's fine. I mean, it's not fine, but it's more acceptable for obvious reasons. He's coming from a position of power, and she's coming from Australia. And now she's married to Josh Homme from the Queens of Stone Age, and everything's great. Has he eaten at your restaurants?
No, he hasn't. Not that I'm aware of.
That's a guy
I think we would have caught that one if he came in.
He's a very tall man.
He's a very tall man.
And that's why I respect him, which we've established. Height is very important to me. That's a perfect jukebox record, Songs for the Deaf, because it's got this horrible radio intros, and then everyone goes, what is that? And that makes it a great jukebox record. It's no Norah Jones, Come Away With Me.
Not many
2001. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your time. There is an event that people should know about. You're doing it with, is it Brother Sister Restaurant? Is that how you describe Compass Rose?
Yeah.
So Brother Sister Restaurant, it's an April 14th. It's a wine event. Is it at Compass Rose or is it at Maidan?
So it's going to be at Compass Rose and Maidan.
Oh, that's perfect.
We're selling tickets to both of them. It's with a company called Borderless Wines, kind of talking about kind of underrepresented regions that produce wine, Mexico, Bolivia. And then we're doing a pop-up on the 15th with some friends of ours at Compass Rose. I think tickets went live today.
And let me compliment your wine program at Maidan. Very limited, very short. So I think there's like 8 glasses you could have, and then the bottles I'm not even going to get into. But your servers know what they're talking about, and they're able to aptly describe them in a very succinct way, and that's not always how it is. And it's good, and I had a wonderful, I think it was a Georgian wine. Do you have Georgian wine?
We have lots of Georgian wine.
Had a Georgian wine. It was great, and you can't find a lot of Georgian wine. You're finding more and more here now that there's a Georgian restaurant in Washington, D.C. But even so, it's a wonderful situation you got going on with the wine program. Borderless Wines, April 14th. There's another event. They'll all be on BrightestYoungThings.com. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We're not going to play Op Ivy, but could you play some transitional music before we're going to close the show with a short chat with famed therapist Laura Gottlieb. She's at 6th and I tonight, so we're going to get to that interview for the second. We'll be back in about a minute. What is this? This is very good.
This is actually some of my music.
You self-promoter. Where can people hear your music?
You can come out live and catch us at Eaton on Sundays, Eaton Hotel.
How dare you promote a separate hotel that's very similar to the hotel you're in right now?
Well, Jack knows. Hey, Jack. I love you, Jack.
So the Eaton Hotel...
We're there some Sundays. Find us at the Kennedy Center. We play a lot of different places.
But where are you in Eaton? Because Eaton has a lot of love. Are you in the roof?
They have the rooftop.
Great.
That's all we'll give them.
Sunday evening.
Sundays, yes.
Sundays.
The next one is not till April 21st. And also, actually, I'm sorry, Rhode Island Avenue Porch Fest on April 13th.
I don't think you get paid for that, so we're not going to promote that one.
We do.
We're April 13th.
April 13th.
Let me say two good things about the Eaton. Number one, it's the only place in that area that's like that. We're in Adams Morgan. There's lots of fun places to hang out here.
Right.
Not a lot of fun places on 12th and K.
No. Maybe after 11, there might be some fun things to get in.
But like that's not. It's no. Different.
Okay, we're not promoting that type of activity.
Number two, best roof sunsets are both here and at the Eaton, specifically at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan on the second floor. If you've ever been here during twilight, I suggest you go up.
I haven't.
Do it, because it's totally different than how it is where we're at right now. Go up there when it's twilight. Does twilight mean like right before sunset?
Sure.
That's what I mean. During sunset.
That's when the vampires can peek their head out.
And the exact same thing with Eaton, because what they've done here is they're really taking advantage of the former building. It used to be a church, so they're using those stained glass windows here. And in Eaton, they have custom-designed stained glass windows. And like the colors pop in that room. So best two sunsets in Washington, D.C. that
best
aren't like
sunsets.
The W.
But come to the line first.
I don't care where you go. Where I'm not getting paid from either of them. Just give me money. Branded. Anyways, tonight, Laura Gottlieb is at Sixth and I in conversation with NPR's Scott Simon. Lori is a relatively well-known therapist. She runs a weekly Ask a Therapist column, and she's got a brand new book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. You probably heard her on Fresh Air. She was on Fresh Air last week. She had a New York Times interview earlier this week. We had a short chat with her to promote tonight's show at Sixth and I. But before we do that, I'm going to read an older piece of hers. Before her current column, she used to write a column for New York Magazine. And this is from the article, Why Is It So Hard to Change? So I wanted to read this and chat with you before we jump into the interview, because this is how Lori and I started with it. And I don't need to know your thoughts on therapy unless they're positive. And if they're positive, then I want to hear your thoughts. But if you're like, I hate therapy, I get it.
I haven't gone to therapy yet. I probably need to, but I think I'm definitely a proponent of it.
There you go. Then that's positive.
Sure,
Then this is why I wanted to start with this, because it's a relatively long paragraph, and I wanted some feedback, because just one man talking into a microphone reading someone else's work that was published 3 years ago from New York Magazine isn't always the best radio. Does that make sense?
Let's do it.
Okay, so I'm going to read this. And then we're going to get to the actual interview. Is okay? And feel free to chime in, okay? Here we go. This is from The Cut. When I was just starting out as a therapist, I'd feel an urgency in these situations. Sometimes I still do. I want to be patient with people as they go through these stages, but I also want to coax them along. Push too hard, they'll regress. Don't push hard enough, they won't progress. People's lives are at stake, and they don't have forever. They'll never get these years back. Of course, therapists aren't persuaders. We can't tell an anorexic to eat. We can't tell an alcoholic not to drink. We can't tell people not to be self-destructive. It just won't work. So far, so good. Does that all make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Okay, here
although
we go.
Although, you'd presume that if they're even in a therapist's office, that some part of them wants help.
Nope, because kids have to go sometimes and you're forced.
Because
like when I was 10, I was forced to go.
Okay.
And I didn't need to, but when I was like 12, I needed to. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Let's go back into it. All we can do is try to help them understand themselves by showing them how to ask themselves the right questions until something happens, either internally or externally, that gets them to do their own persuading. It's all about layering the groundwork. Go in, back off. All the while, we keep in mind that for every gain, there will be a loss, and we help clients to explore the question, what are they afraid of giving up? So, does all of that make sense?
It sounds like a good approach to dating as well.
I agree. And parenting and everything else.
Every human interaction.
Yes. So that's what I started with Lori. And now we're going to hear the rest of that interview with Lori. We'll be back here live next week on BYT Radio.
I think that when people feel like they want to make a change, they are very confused about the fact that they know exactly what they need to do to change. And yet, why don't they do it? And the reason that people don't tend to change is that they want to cling to the familiar, that there's something very comforting about the familiar, even if the familiar is unpleasant or even downright miserable. And there's something very scary about the uncertainty of doing something different.
In this same piece, and you mentioned the five steps of like getting to therapist, the five stages, and getting to the contemplation stage is probably the most difficult aspect of that. So do you have any advice for someone that that loves therapy? I love therapy. I feel like it should be mandatory. Is there anything that I could do to get someone else to maybe to the contemplation stage? Is that even possible?
I think it's hard if you're trying to help somebody close to you, because you will have an agenda. Your agenda is that whatever they're doing, partly you want to help them, but partly whatever they're doing is making your life difficult. And mm-hmm. so you want to improve your life too. And I think people resist that. The nice thing about the therapy room is that we don't have an agenda. We're just holding up a mirror to the person and saying, I want you to take a look at your reflection. I want you to look at the ways you keep shooting yourself in the foot and end up in similar situations over and over. And the more that they can see that, the more they're going to move toward making the changes. We always say that insight is the booby prize of therapy, that you can have all the insight in the world, but if you don't make changes out in the world, the insight is useless. So I think it's really important for people to first gain the insight in a way that doesn't feel threatening to them. And the more you can open them up and open that space up in them, the more amenable they will be to making change. But it has to come from within them. It can't be somebody telling them to change.
Do you ever regret any, I know therapists don't give advice, but sometimes advice comes out, you literally write an advice column. Do you ever regret any of your advice?
I think when I was first starting out, I felt a lot of pressure to give advice. Of what I thought was the benign sort. I didn't think it was, you know, I would never answer a question like, should I have another baby or should I marry this person or divorce this person? But, you know, advice, especially for young people in their 20s. And I think that there are some times when more prescriptive advice can be helpful, but really we want people to become more independent in making their decisions. We want to encourage that. So I think that we want to help them learn about how do you reflect on a choice, how do you anticipate the consequences of your choice, and how do you learn to trust yourself as you make these choices.
I understand that you shouldn't say you should have a kid or you shouldn't have a kid. You shouldn't be married or you should get a divorce. I understand that those are very sticky situations, and clearly every situation is different. But I had a therapist that refused to pretty much say anything was like 100% wrong or 100% right. And I got very fed up with this therapist because I was like, just admit Nazis are wrong. Like the Nazi party, bad party, not one good redeeming quality about the, just could we agree with that? And she wouldn't go along with that. So I'm not asking your stances on Nazis. I made mine perfectly clear. But there has to be some sort of like clear right and wrong with some of these questions.
Well, I think that her values might not, you know, let's put the Nazi question aside because that's sure. You know, an extreme case. But, you know, let's say that you seem to want her to agree with you about something. And I think it's really important that therapists don't kind of place their values on the patient, that it's really about you and what you believe and what you think. And I guess the question would be sort of, why was it so important for her to agree with you? And maybe there was something going on where you were feeling like you couldn't really, she didn't feel like a person to you in certain ways. And you were trying to maybe bring out her humanity in a different way. I don't know what went on, but really we're not there to validate your position, you know, like, isn't my boss a jerk? You know, that
sure,
kind of
sure,
thing.
Sure.
We're there to, you know, we can understand your position, but then we're here to help you figure out what you want to do about it.
Sure. I'm going to give you the context. Now I'm playing the role of not a at all good interviewer, but definitely a guy that's just complaining about his former therapist. It was during Charlottesville.
Yeah.
It was during the incident in Charlottesville, and we're based in Washington, D.C. It's not that far. We work a few blocks from the White House. It's like, can we just agree that the Nazis are bad? And that was an issue. So now I'm back with my old therapist, and I'm very, very happy to be with a different person.
I mean, I think there are times when people feel the therapist is too removed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's different from from giving advice. I think there are lots of ways that a therapist can be very present and human and normal, you know, and not sort of the blank slate or the tabula rasa, which most therapists today are not, and still help you in the ways that would be most beneficial to you.
In your book, your brand new book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, you are essentially one of the cases in the book.
Yep, I am.
And one of the things that you do is you Google your therapist and you say you regret it. And this has also come up in your columns that maybe you shouldn't Google your therapist. I loved Googling my therapist because I was looking for someone that was like a little bit further along in their life than me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just want to know, do you think that's a generational thing? Because I'm in my mid-30s and to not Google someone at this point in culture seems kind of absurd.
Right. I think it's important that if you want some information about your therapist, particularly before you go in and you want to get a sense of, well, how do they practice and what's their background and might I have something in common with this person? Would I feel comfortable talking to this person? I think that people do that all the time. What I did was I kind of Google stalked him one night and I sort of went down the internet rabbit hole. A colleague of mine calls the internet the most effective short-term non-prescription painkiller out there. And that's what I was doing, and I was kind of using it as a way of alleviating some anxiety. And I found out something about him, which was that his father had died at a relatively young age of a heart attack. And I had been talking in my recent sessions about my close relationship with my aging father and how I felt so grateful to have this time with him. And I had this sinking feeling in my stomach when I saw that on Google, because I worried that he had had to listen to me go on and on about this close relationship and this opportunity that I had at the end of my father's life that he didn't have. And I wondered if that had been painful for him. And so I was ashamed that I had Googled him to that degree. And so I didn't want to admit it. And then I also started editing myself in session. So I think that there's no hard and fast rule about whether to Google or not Google your therapist. I just think it's important to ask yourself, why do I want this information? And I think I want this information, but do I really? Will it get in the way of our work together?
You mentioned that you were editing yourself in the session, and clearly the point of therapy is to not do that. That being said, I take notes before my sessions. I keep like a running draft of everything I think I want to talk about, not so much to have a script to work from, but more of an outline of things that I think are big that I might not realize without that clarity. What are your thoughts of patients bringing notes to therapy?
Every patient is different. There are some patients who feel like they have a lot that goes on during the week for them that they would like to discuss in therapy, and if they don't write it down, they will forget it. Other people come in or some people come on the drive over. They've got sort of an opening line, but we often go other places, even if they open with that line. And other people, which is what most people do, is we sit down and they kind of transition from the outside world and take a few breaths and see what comes to mind. And those tend to be the most productive sessions.
Okay.
Because they go in unexpected places.
Have you ever had your mind changed from your point of view in a session?
All the time.
Really?
In the book, definitely. You can see that happen. In my sessions with my therapist in the book, I come in with a certain agenda and my therapist points out something that I hadn't seen at all and that often I'm very resistant to at the beginning because I want to see things my way and I want him to see things my way. And one thing therapy does, it will help you to see things from a broader perspective, and that makes you feel less trapped in your circumstance.
Is there a therapy network that I don't know about? Like, do other therapists talk the same way like other journalists get together and sort of shoot the shit?
So we have in Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, I write about our consultation groups. Most therapists belong to some kind of consultation group where they meet weekly or monthly and discuss their cases. Because therapy is interesting. In any other job, people either see a product that you produce or you work on a team together on various projects. in therapy, nobody but your patient is seeing what you do. And so we, on the one hand, we don't get the praise for a job well done, right? We don't have a boss who's saying, hey, that was a really great job you did in that session. But we also don't get feedback on what we could do better. So we go to consultation groups and go over our cases with colleagues to make sure that we're not missing anything, or to see if we can, even if we aren't missing something, to see is there something else we can be thinking about or doing better.
Congratulations on selling the book to Ceres.
Thank you. Thank you.
Will you have any say in that, or are your hands clean at this point? Like, you're done?
No, I'm very involved in it. And I really want the TV series. It's with Eva Longoria. And I really want the TV series to just show a person who happens to be a therapist as opposed to a show about therapy. I think it's really important that people see what therapy really is, because one of the things I wanted to do with the book was to demystify it. It's not this thing where we're wizards, you know, or it's not this thing where I think these two cliches of the therapist are either the cold, distant, brick wall sort of therapist, or the one who's sort of a train wreck in her personal life, kind of the hot mess, and you know, but is very competent in the therapy room. Most therapists are neither of those. And I think it's really, I think, comforting in a way to know that your therapist is just a normal person, because our humanity is our greatest tool in helping you. So the fact that we live just normal lives is, and we have our own struggles, is something that I think people should know, so they aren't so afraid of going to a therapist or what the therapist might think of them, or is the therapist judging them.